Question. This is kind of a what, where, how, who kind of question. That word refuge. What is your refuge? Think about it for a minute. I was pondering this with our sister Margaret this week. You know, she just came home from a couple weeks at hospital and therapy. You know what her answer was? Refuge? That's my home. It was the home she grew up in, and though she raised her children in another place, she and her husband bought that house in Timonium. And that has been her dwelling place for a long time, and it's her refuge, especially after all the hard work of therapy. Again, what is your refuge? Is it your home? Do you find refuge there? Or is it full of chaos? Is there a sense of emptiness there? You know, I think back to the story of creation and that very beginning verses of the Bible where it talks about how God, in the beginning, which is what Genesis means, or in Hebrew the word is Bereshit. In the beginning, God created. Now we have some different understandings that we can pull from those words. Either God created something out of nothing, which the Latin words ex nihilo mean. Or maybe out of the chaos, God created order, brought into being out of the swirl. You know, both of those kind of speak to our lives, I believe. What is your refuge? Is your home your refuge? There are different kinds of homes, you know, and just because you have a house doesn't mean your house is a home. I wonder about, I know Linda and Paul are away celebrating their anniversary, but you know, her mom just moved to a nursing home, a retirement village, Oakcrest. I wonder how long it will take before her apartment there will feel like home. Speaking of Oakcrest, Eva, does your place feel like home? You've been there for a while now. Does it feel like home?
Yeah, because my other one's gone.
Your other one's gone, yeah. Sometimes our refuge changes, doesn't it? But is our refuge necessarily a place? You know, we're in the middle of a political season and we've got certain persons who are trying to acquire a particular house, a White House. I wonder, does the White House feel like a refuge? You know, seeing what all the president has to deal with, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'd want that house. It may be one of the most secure in the world, but, you know, I see the people who go into office and they come out with gray hair. Is that their refuge? What is your refuge? Think about that. Is refuge a place? Well, yes and no. Really, in this chapter in the Bible, this psalm, which is similar to some others that we may be familiar, refuge is spoken of not just as a particular place through various different words and word pictures. You know, it's spoken of as a way along the path, but also a part of the journey. I mean, how do you describe a place that is under the shelter of an eagle's wing? You know, those pinions. I had to look up, what's a pinion? You know, under the pinions. The pinions are they're the far part of a bird's wing. Yeah, the far part. You know, it's kind of the outer pinion. It's just sort of like thinking of a bird similar to an arm, you know, wing sort of like this. And this would be the pinion. You know, the hand part, which goes actually much further out for birds. Is that a place? I mean, certainly a wing is not meant to stay still. A wing is meant to fly. Certainly in a nest, a baby bird is sheltered under that wing. But there's always a purpose for that, because baby birds do not stay baby birds for long. The whole goal of having that refuge is that at a certain point, that bird will step out of the nest, right? So to call a refuge of the pinions of the mother, for instance, is that a place to which we return? I can't go back under my mother's wings. Can you? Some of you can. I mean, I saw you back there. Daniel, when I was saying this, I saw him go under and grabbed his mother's arm and put it under. Refuge. If you've been traveling with me this month and in my sermons, I've been sort of relating the scriptures to this whole concept of Sabbath. And I really appreciated Marva Dawn's words on Sabbath. Because in Sabbath is not necessarily a place, is it? It is, you know, when we think about refuge, I started out by talking about where, when, how, why. I mean, it wasn't the why, but who is your refuge? You know, there is a sense of when-ness to refuge. When we think of things in terms of Sabbath, Sabbath comes with a regularity that we often miss in our society that has become so 24/7 driven. We miss that regularity of the weekly cycle that is built into the very nature of things. It's built definitely into our faith. Our faith stems from the beginning with a sense of God's creative power in this world. A creative power that brought into existence things either ex nihilo or out of the chaos. In a series of days. It didn't all happen at once. But there was a progression. But on the seventh day, after going through every day and being able to assert at the end of the day, behold, it was good. At the end of that, on the seventh day, God rested. And that rest is for restoration. That rest is space, it's place, it's time. It's meant for us to be renewed for another week. As we come together, and she was trying, if you were listening to what she had to say, to enlarge our vision of this time. There was once upon a time when we saw this day of rest as a time you don't do anything. Well, what about play? Play is an important part of Sabbath. In the refuge, in a place where it's okay to be who you truly are, in the shelter of God's wings. Sabbath. I love this psalm. Though this psalm has some promises that we need to be careful with. Just like all of God's psalms, and all of God's promises, I mean. Like all of God's promises, we need to treat them with a bit of care. Because if we take them too literalistically, they don't quite sound real. I mean, the promises here is this, you know, those who abide in God's shelter, that bad things won't happen to you if you take it too literally, right? Were you listening to the psalm as I sang? Let me just go through some of the promises. You will not fear the terror of the night, the arrow that flies by day, the pestilence that stalks in darkness, or destruction that wastes at noonday. You know, the key there is fearing, and that fear can be taken away, but those things still exist, whether back in the day of the psalmist or today. You know, it talks about people falling at your side, but it will not come near you. Well, you know, friends, I've walked with people for whom it has come near. And you have too. Difficulty. No evil shall befall you. No scourge come near your tent. Not necessarily so in our experience. Is that the case? The point is, and this scripture is one that points this out very clearly. Even Satan, the great prosecutor, the adversary, can take scripture and use it, can use promises. Do you remember where this particular scripture was used by the evil one? Anyone? Took place in when Jesus was, after he was baptized, he went out into the wilderness for 40 days. You recall that story? And there he had some times of temptation when the evil one came to him and he faced into temptation. And through one of these, as it is recalled in Scripture, he was taken to the pinnacle of the temple. And Satan says, just jump, leap. You know you're not going to fall because, let's see, where is that? He will command, God will command his angels concerning you to guard you. On their hands they will bear you up so that you will not dash your foot against a stone. That was a direct quote in the wilderness. Even Jesus faced into the wrong use of Scripture. We need to be careful with these promises. But they are true. They are true. As we wrestle with them on the Sabbath. Wrestling. Is that play? Wrestling? I remember a dear friend of mine back when I was in college. He was actually a retired professor who still taught one class a year. And he had a habit back then. His name was Carl Ziegler. Do you remember Carl Ziegler? He sort of became my mentor for a while. He had a habit of taking one college student under his wings for a while. And I would go over there. He'd invite me over and have dinner at his place and stuff. He was living alone at that point. His wife had died. And I think back in college, he was a wrestler. But what he wanted to do, on a couple of occasions, he took me down into the basement where he had a pad on the ground. And he wanted to wrestle with me. And that was a rather strange thing for me at the time, because I was thinking, gosh, this guy's in his 70s and here I am, you know, 20, 21, you know, and I know I've told this story before, but, you know, okay, I'll get down, okay, and get into position. Now, I was not a wrestler, mind you, but, you know, I certainly was a lot younger than he was, and I think he just wanted to play. And, you know, when I wrestled with him, you know, I started out going, well, I'm not going to do this too hard. You know, I don't want to break his arm or something like that. That guy was strong. I couldn't pin him. I mean, he's in his 70s and I was in my 20s and I couldn't pin this guy. But it was a renewing kind of thing. We stepped into it together. Our gathering often happened on Sundays anyway. And that was good. That was good. I found a refuge in him as my mentor. And out of that time, there was, you know, the chaos of my late adolescence, early adulthood. Sometimes feeling like I was trying to bring something out of nothing. Other times trying to find some order amid that chaos. But God was able to work. Just like God is able to work in all of us. If we allow God to do so. God is our refuge. God is our strength. And God's work in us is such that we are not pushed down, we are lifted up. I like that concept of being able to fly. You know, that's God's purpose. God, that's God's Sabbath purpose in our lives. To lift us up, and realizing and where we realize that God is God, not us. And God strengthens us to be able to be the persons whom we were created to be. God has been our help in ages past and our hope for years to come. Our refuge.